You're listening to the Zipline Logistics Truck Yeah podcast, where we explore all kinds of hot topics in the logistics industry. Get ready to learn, laugh, and get your freight on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Zipline Logistics podcast. My name is Jesse Jewett. Joined with me, as always, Teddy Lee Knox. Hello, Teddy.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. We got a special guest, our favorite recurring guest, our president and co-founder of Zipline Logistics, Andrew Lynch. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. I think I should be considered a co-host.
Are you pump the brakes there?
Nope, you're in. I agree.
Another hot topic today, tariffs. 2025, I bet I'm going to just go out on a limb right here, but Webster's word of the year is probably going to be tariffs in 2025. You heard it here first.
That's a good call.
Yeah, it's always fun to think about that. I never remember to like actually look it up, and then it's in a newspaper on whatever day. You're like, oh, yeah, that doesn't make sense. Anyways, why we're talking about tariffs, we were just chatting before we started recording. Has not been a topic on our podcast previously, certainly before 2024. It's come up recently because of, as of January 20th, 2025, the word tariff has gotten into our lives quite often. So we're just going to go through a quick timeline of the tariffs and how they've been implemented. And then we're going to talk through the results or the ramifications of some of those and kind of where we landed. So essentially January 20th, the first kickoff of tariffs were primarily between our North American trading partners, Mexico and Canada. We updated those right off the rip here on inauguration day or the day after through an executive order. And we went through essentially a 2-month period from like January 20th all the way through the end of March. A lot of off and on. We saw it here on a day-to-day basis of, you know, a surge of freight into Canada or a surge of freight out of Canada to kind of, quote-unquote, beat the tariffs, only to have them be turned off or reduced drastically a week or two later or 24 hours after they were supposed to be implemented, et cetera, et cetera. That all led up to April 2nd, which I believe we were calling Liberation Day, which for those who don't know, there was a large chart. The president of the United States was on the White House lawn and he was going through, again, country by country and the impact or the planned execution of said tariffs that would be implemented within a week. And that was kind of a 10% blanket across the board, as well as, you know, individual countries experiencing or having higher percentage tariffs implemented based on our trade surplus or lack of based on like what we trade with them. Essentially, China definitely experienced our number one trading partner, as Andrew was going to mention, and that was at that time 145% to be enacted on April 9th. So we headed to April 9th and they take effect. Anything? Did I miss anything?
No, I think you nailed it.
I'm just wondering, everybody listening is like nodding along or like, wait, what?
Yeah. So at this point, April 9th, 104% tariffs for China, European goods, 20% import tax, Japanese goods tax, 24%, Vietnam, 46%. China responds, additional 50% tariffs on U.S. good. China's new tariffs took effect 12 hours after the tariffs that we implemented put in place. European Union also approved new tariffs against the United States, et cetera, et cetera. Very quickly, later on that day, this is where it gets fun. We backed down on the reciprocal tariffs for the next 90 days. So back to a universal 10%, except for, hold your horses, China, you're not included. Go to the back of the line. China would be 125%. After they would announce a new round of retaliation. So from there until...
Well, I think...
Go ahead, Teddy.
Jump in real quick.
Absolutely.
So like right around there, I feel like is when I started hearing things from customers, from prospects in articles in the news about people realizing that things were not sourced where they thought that they were sourced from. You know, they have production companies that they work with, they're co-manufacturers that work in the United States. So they think everything is sourced from here. And then they're finding out, oh, it's not. And I think that was a really eye-opening time for everybody, not obviously just because of what you're saying, Jesse, but also so much is going on. Everyone is so busy. We're moving so fast. People didn't necessarily realize that. I know there's a lot of articles, too, about certain types of coffee beans being sourced from somewhere and when no one knew.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those, you're uninformed until you're informed, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Holy cow, this is, even though it said made in the USA, actually, that's a qualifier because if 45% of it comes from out of the country, that's fine. All these other things. But yeah, it was a wild ride there. And yeah, you couldn't keep up with the news, as is typical. But here we go. Since April 9th, April 11th, this is where the exemptions come in, or the exclusions, whatever you want to call it. All right, hold on. Non-electronics from China. We're going to add those. Those are going to be exempt. April 13th. Hold on. Electronics aren't going to be exempt. Or they're not going to be exceptions. They're going to be temporary. April 29th, we jump forward a couple weeks. 25% tariffs were modified for car makers. So they'd not be stacked with other tariffs. So now, all right, now the list is getting longer and longer. May 8th, United States and Britain reached their preliminary deal on imports and exports, keeping a 10% levy in place for all British exports, but they're still working to finalize that deal. And then finally, the last update that I have is May 12th, the White House and China agreed to back off for now from the steepest tariffs. It brings everything back down for China, Chinese imports to 30% from 145, as mentioned, and China would reduce its levies on American goods to 10% from 125%. So Andrew kind of talked about it, we've been discussing off air is that, you know, we kind of threw out 145, more or less people panicked, the greater economic minds in the world panicked there for a while. And here we are a month plus later, and we're down to 30% and 10% on the two kind of largest economies going back and forth.
Yeah, and you know, I think importantly, and I just maybe recognize this so our audience doesn't lose faith in us, but you know, we realize that we're both late and early talking about this subject. Like, you just went through a 4-month timeline with an enormous number of bullet points, only to find that just 10 days ago, the most significant aspect of that timeline happened, and that, you know, there were something like 200 trade deals that needed to happen. And so far there's been like 1.5, right?
It is
the UK, which isn't even totally clear yet. And then this sort of broad pullback, which is a pause. You know, I think that, you know, a couple important things that stand out to me as far as just trying to wrap my head around getting comfortable with what's going on is that the bond markets dictated what was going to happen with China. And mm-hmm. tariffs, right? Like that's what happened there. It wasn't like cooler heads prevailed. It was a really, really, really clear message from, you know, essentially the health of the macroeconomy, a leading indicator that said this needs to change pronto.
Cannot very, happen. Very quickly.
And then so that makes me more comfortable with the idea that, like, hey, this 90-day pause, it's probably not gonna just expire and become 145% tariffs again, just because everyone's already seen what happens with that. And you know, the other thing is just how much sentiment is reality, right? And that you know, we saw our customers changing the way that they plan things, the way that they order things, start happening, you know, really right after the election. It
right.
was like, oh, hey, the forecast has already kind of been given to us, or at least, you know, this administration has stated its intention. We understand that there's going to be disruptions to our supply chain. I think, you know, it's funny, you know, similar to how during COVID, everyone all of a sudden became aware of trucking.
Right.
This is like suddenly people are becoming more aware of supply chains.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
wow. All right. Yeah. I understand that, you know, the soda that I get, you know, at Kroger doesn't come from China, but the pulp that makes the, you know, the box juice, that turns into a case.
Yeah.
Right. Like these things, like these componentry products that are coming over, if suddenly there's a huge, you know, disruption there, then we're going to have a problem getting product on shelf. And I don't think we've seen that part yet, right?
Not yet.
You know, we should be in it right now. I think the pause was shorter than it needed to be in order to cause really massive disruption. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think there's still a good chance that you see some of that.
Yeah, generally speaking, it's a wait and see.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's there's a lot of in this social media age. There's a lot of prognosticators out there. There's a lot of people that have a voice, whether they want to believe it or not. Hey, you're listening to one of them here on the Zipline Logistics Truck Yeah podcast. But yeah, it's definitely a what happens will happen, right? We're living in it. So whether it's a simulation or something else, we're here and we're dealing with it. But let's just talk about the broader, like tariffs. And I know we've heard them referred to as taxes or things like that. But like, what do you define as tariffs, Andrew? And why does that matter for a lot of our CPG customers?
Tariffs are a tax, right? That at the end of the day, they're paid by the importing party. And you know, look, the reason that it matters is that, again, when the cost of componentry, when the cost of things like paper pulp to make boxes, or you know, plastic scrap to make bottles, or aluminum to make cans, or you know, anything else starts to have, you know, significant and unplanned increases.
Yep.
It has a short-term effect of crunching the margin of a space, especially in consumer goods, that's already, you know, pretty damn tight, right? I mean, you know, a 35% operating margin is a good baseline margin for a consumer good. But, you know, by the time that drops down into like retained earnings, it's a really, really, really small number.
Yeah.
And so, you know, monkeying around with cost of goods sold on key componentry is like a really, really, really dangerous game. And so, you know, when you have companies, especially in the space that we serve, and the, you know, the kind of the small to middle market, these folks can't necessarily just adjust to sourcing their product from Vietnam instead. And so that, you know, that I think is really where things get challenging for our demographic.
What they should be grateful for and thankful for, theoretically, right? There's not a, in some of these CPG brands, I know it's unique for everybody, but maybe the main product, there's not a lot of quote unquote main products or ingredients is probably a better word, right? And you think about a car company, how many components could possibly go into a car and how many of those are sourced from other places? So, all right, even if it was 45% of the components are sourced from China, like how do you move? Not only are you going to have to move the wheel, you're going to have to move the axle, you're going to have to move, and this is my car knowledge coming out here, the door, like I don't know any carburetor, there we go. But yeah, so like that's where it gets, I can't even imagine how complicated or that would be.
And again, like going back to, you know, trying to remove, you know, assumptions from your mindset on this is, you know, there's certain things that just are never going to be made here, right?
Yeah,
you just cannot make them. You can't make it. I mean, you can make a t-shirt here, but it's not a t-shirt that you can sell to a mass market that you can build a business around.
It's not a 10 pack of 10.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that some of this is just a process of going back to like, you know, first principles in a way of just like, hey, let's just start from zero and figure out what we can and can't produce here.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, sort of what sort of outcry we get, what sort of result we get from this experiment.
There's going to be a lot of creative solutions, right? That's what's, I guess, the exciting part of it is that you get past the surprise or unexpected nature of it all, or trying to figure out what's next or prediction. And then you just kind of realize like, okay, there's going to be some ingenuity. There's going to be some entrepreneurial spirit. I think that's what this country is founded on. We're talking to one right here.
And I mean, you know, there's going to be winners and losers, and the losers are gonna you know, disparage the process and disparage the concept of tariffs, and the winners are gonna celebrate and say, hey, you know, thank God that you know I'm playing on an even field now, right?
But yeah,
and unfortunately, or whether or not it's you know been totally acknowledged, but like that just really boils down to the market that you're in, the product that you're slinging, and what its top line margin looks like.
Yeah,
because you know our electronics clients, you know, they saw this in November,
right?
They pulled forward inventories way, way ahead. And then when this stuff went into place, they were like, yeah, we're fine. We've got so much inventory. We're good to go.
Pause the ships. We're good.
But if you're Mattel or Hasbro or somebody that makes, you know, a $7 board game or a $18 board game that costs, you know, $6.50 to make in China, but costs, you know, $14.50 to make in the United States, you're upside down, and you just, your choice becomes don't sell the product here or, you know, figure out how to jack that price up. And you're seeing, you know, retailers talk about not raising their prices.
Yeah.
But what a lot of those retailers are doing is just rotating out products, right? Hey, I don't sell Hydro Flask water bottles anymore because that I would have to raise my price because Hydro Flask is not going to sell these to me at the same price that they were selling me to before wholesale. So I'm switching to another company, and now I can say, hey, no, I'm not raising my prices for tariffs. I'm swapping out the brand that I sell. And yeah, I think we're going to see a fair amount of that. That is sort of caged, an underhanded version of responding to tariffs.
Huh. Teddy, you know what that reminds me of?
What?
Involuntary sampling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, look, I think we're still too early. And look, it may not happen that we really see, you know, shelf space, you know, sort of a big swaths of empty shelf space. But I know that in my house, and I, you know, I'm not a panic person. That's probably obvious by my tone, but you know, we went out and bought certain things like staples in bulk, because to me, it was the psychology of, you know, there's a PTSD aspect to walking in and seeing like think that there's no Honey Nut Cheerios and you've got a 6-year-old at home like that. Right. And you're like, oh my God, if there's no Cheerios,
perfect encapsulation. But, holy cow.
Yeah. Like that's something that just never runs out. Like that's something we have in perpetuity. And to be out of it, then suddenly you're like, oh God. And you go and you just kind of go into this panic mode. And I just felt like, well, the implications of everyone having, you know, their dial turned up a couple notches on the, you know, hoarding, would really have an impact. So anyway, now I have way too much toilet paper and
how do you know, Cheerios?
A lot of to so many Cheerios.
All of this goes back to articles and I think videos we have from you as well about controlling the controllables. All of this goes back to that. Yes, this is all very, very real. However, maybe this doesn't make sense. So let's see what other market is out there. Let's take this SKU we were thinking about doing and reapplying. Let's, you know, I don't know, ration the toilet paper in our house, like whatever it might be, or don't eat cereal for dinner. Whatever the situations are, I think that's something that you have to keep in mind, because the just-in-time shipping models that I remember so well coming into the industry seem to be coming back because consumer spending is impacted by these things. We can't control that. We can't control how people are impacted by the social media and influencers talking about these things, but you can control, you know, exactly to your point, what materials you're using, how you're marketing it, and what you're buying and where you're selling it to.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And you know, I think that what we see, at least from our cohort of like young sort of challenger brands, you know, are the, and I think we've seen this for the past couple of years, but this is another sort of layer on that pressure, is focusing on, you know, velocity, like store velocity, not trying to spread yourself out, right? Not, you don't want to go nationwide in Whole Foods for your first, you know, $5 million sale. Like that's a quick way to end up upside down in a whole lot of ways, transportation being one of them. And so, you know, having conversations with brands that are slowing down their push to add, you know, new retail doors and really focusing on, you know, how can we extend our position inside of the doors we're already in, where we already have traction. And I think, you know, continuing to focus on that is going to be the order of the day for probably the next, you know, couple of years. I mean, you know, that in the on the transportation side of things, again, it's, you know, it's impossible, right? You're going to read completely paradoxical opinions on every single topic inside of transportation right now, because nobody knows how this is going to play out. But, you know, what is an absolute guarantee is that there will be dislocation.
Yeah.
Right. We don't need net revocations to outpace blah, 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 blah. We don't need any of that stuff. What we need to understand is that like port traffic is going to change on the West Coast, because we're talking about tariffs. We haven't really talked about the port fees that only Chinese ships are going to touch. Right. So now those guys don't want to go to, you know, Washington and then Northern Cal and then Long Beach. And then like, they want to go to Long Beach and then go back. And so, you know, the patterns by which this freight is going to flow in, whether it's a surge or not, is going to change. And as a result of that, the dynamics of shipping cross country will change. Right. And so, you know, when those dynamics shift, just like everything else in transportation, when produce season happens in Florida, costs go up in Oregon. Like it, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to walk someone through. But what I think, you know, is important for our listener to understand is that, to that end of controlling the controllables, it's, you know, focus on your core, focus on the things that, that make you profitable. You know, don't, you know, try to model some hyperscale, you know, sort of path to growth, and then work with partners that can help you understand these dynamics. You know, very few people have the solutions to no capacity. In fact, you know, quite frankly, nobody has the solutions to no capacity. But no capacity only happens to you if you couldn't plan ahead far enough to understand that there was going to be a capacity, you know, constraint in that market, or that, you know, that you couldn't see this, these kind of dislocations coming. So, you know, I think it's just important to focus your energy on understanding where you're exposed to potential dislocation, and then, you know, kind of what are our contingencies around solving those issues.
I've been dealing with, this is a personal revelation, so bear with me, but I've been dealing with a lot of like data and then emotional reaction. Shocker, I'm in logistics, and it is pretty wild to see. So I've been in this for almost 18 years. Right around this time, Southern California tends to quote unquote heat up, right? There's a lot of shipments that are coming out of Southern California. Leading up from April 2nd until, like you said, 10 days ago, you would have thought that Southern California would have been a ghost town. Sure enough, we go through, we had Blitz Week last week, and now we're in kind of the second half of May heading into a holiday. Southern California is quote unquote heating up. There's 100 loads for every truck. So it's like the more things change and the more disruption, the more they stay the same. Like this is, there's a lot of pattern behavior here, and it's going to take, what's wild is it's going to take something bigger than this to disrupt it. And this is disruptive, obviously, but like, I mean, think back of 2020 to 2022. I mean, that was a disruption.
Yeah.
This is child's play. I'm kidding. But like, but yeah. I don't know. It was wild to think like that. I mean, you read some of these articles. There's 65% less container bookings coming from China. Like it's dropped off a cliff. Like here's what we're going to see. And you're right. Like we're going to see some of that in probably the next few weeks from now, all the way probably up until July 4th. And then I read the next one was there's a surge now. And then you see the next article comes out in the port chief of Los Angeles, like, this is, we're going to be fine.
There is no surge.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Like, yeah. So it's okay.
It's the driver shortage.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah. It's a funny thing to think about. And I think also, like, to your point, and probably a good place to sort of always recenter when you're starting to panic is, you know, all of these forces, you know, call them what you want, they're up against like the greatest economic power in the history of the universe, as far as we understand the universe, and that's the American consumer, right? And it doesn't matter if you take away, you know, even our largest trading partner to some extent, consumers are going to consume, right? Yeah. And that product is going to come, or a replacement for that product is going to come from somewhere at some cost and move in some level of volume. And, you know, priorities will shift on where people's money goes. But like at the end of the day, the American consumer spends X trillion dollars a year, and they're going to spend that money regardless. And so, you know, if you zoom out far enough, it's like, well, there is no disruption because there's freight. It's just, it's not coming out of Southern California this month. It's coming out of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, it's coming out of Houston. And yeah, that's a really valid point. But, you know, at the end of the day, our customer does, you know, have to have a clear view into where their risks are, right?
Yeah.
And
that's a good segue. Let's talk about some of the ways that they can navigate, or CPG brands. We've touched on it a little bit. Let's get like specific, right? As Teddy mentioned, controlling the controllables. A lot of this stuff we've talked about before. Lead time, right? Planning ahead. to the extent that you can, right? Yeah. I mean, maybe it's different now, but what
forecasting
else?
Forecasting off of actual data.
There you go.
Yeah, that's I mean, accurate volume forecasts would, I mean, which like is like a white whale, I think, as far as our experience
goes. It's like a moving target, but I think doing it off of data is helpful rather than just, you know, forecasting to forecast.
Yeah.
So
if
you have previous data, that makes a huge difference. I know you weren't asking me, but I jumped in anyway.
No, I mean, you're probably a greater expert than anybody else at the table. Yeah, and look, I think, you know, another point that's related to that is sort of eliminating waste around things like you know, failed allocation, right? And that's about putting pressure on your customers, right? Or your in our customers' case, their retailers, right? As suppliers, is demanding a clearer picture on you know, what they plan to move. And again, to some extent, not trying to capitalize on every dollar that's hanging out there and making sure that you're a little bit more cost focused. Because what you know, we at this table, and if our customers are listening, they're gonna, you know, maybe blush a little bit, but man, we send a lot of the same products, you know, as ships passing in the night across the country to reallocate, you know, warehouses where the, you know, the mix just wasn't the same as what was forecasted. And how many of these, you know, warehouse transfers are happening? And forget about this, like, microcosm of the CPG marketplace,
right?
Then zoom out to the $1 trillion marketplace. Like, how many hundreds of billions of dollars are being flushed down the toilet by folks shipping product that should have already been in LA,
yeah,
LA, and then shipping product that, you know, should have been in Dallas over to Dallas.
Just back and forth.
Just transferring product around. And I'm not saying that warehouse transfers aren't necessary. I'm just saying that.
Sure.
An allocation thing is the hardest thing any of our customers deal with.
Absolutely.
Not trying to degrade that, but.
Yeah, it's to stick up for those people, Andrew. It's much easier to direct a truck from LA to Dallas than it is to direct a container ship, right, from an import.
Absolutely. But what's maybe a little bit easier than that is to look at your buyers as partners and say, hey, I need to understand and commit. And again, I know that these are lofty asks. More than anyone probably understand what it's like to be a salesperson being told to go get more definitive detail from a customer. but you know, in this environment, if we want to have smooth flowing, you know, consumerism, it is going to take partnering in direction, right? Don't just partner with your suppliers, partner with your customers and ask your customers to partner with you.
Ask the questions, right? You never know until you ask. I remember we had, on our conversation with Cody from CD, right? He was talking about, just a simple thing of like a delivery date, right? A 2-day point that is delivering on a Tuesday. Hey, what if we just moved it back to Wednesday? Like these little simple asks. Yes, it might take some changes on the retailer side, but that could be the difference between paying a team and paying a single, right? It's a big deal. It adds up over time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how, like, you know, we spend so much of like the lexicon is on automation and AI and like a robot picking for your warehouses and a robot driving your truck. It's like, you know, it would be a whole lot quicker and easier. Just let's just optimize what's there.
Yeah.
Which is what we're spend our time doing here. But I feel like it's such a boring topic, I guess, that it just tends to not be an area of focus. But
it's a scary topic too, to have to advocate for yourself when it's a brand, not you. And similar to what you're saying, one of my niches, I would say here, is helping customers actually look at big box retailers like UNFI or KeHE and confirm like they're not ordering what you asked. These charges are, you know, an accident. And being able to push back, show the proof, you need support for that. So you have to have the right people in line. You also need data. But then you have to do the scary thing, which is go up and say, I think there was a mistake.
Yeah.
This is what I need. And you have to remind them, Jesse, you and I talk about this all the time, 6-7 times.
Yeah.
Someone has to hear it before they can actually understand it. And if this only comes up once or twice a quarter, you actually have to increase that number of how many times you have to say those things to get it across. And then once it's planned, once it's set, then you see that growth you were talking about, where you're growing within a brand, within a retailer, not just spreading things out.
Yeah. And like, you know, again, back to sort of that centering exercise of, look, at the retailer wants the same thing you want. Retailers are fighting their own battle. They need products that draw foot traffic in. They need products that excite people. They need new and innovative products. They need line extensions. Like these things, they do need them. You're not just asking for them. You're offering it to them.
Yep.
And to that extent, you know, your ability to have conversations with them that are, hey, you love, you know, these potato chips that I'm selling you, these innovative flavored potato chips that I'm selling you, and I love selling them through your doors. here are the things that I, you know, need in order to make this better, smoother.
Here's what
cheaper.
Helps me get the product to the shelf to you faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
More efficiently.
Yes. Yes. More predictably so that you can run a promo and get more foot traffic in here. Right. And so, yeah, it really is. And, you know, in these times, it's all about just, again, being a partner in every direction and, you know, asking those questions.
If I don't have to, I don't go into grocery stores. I do the bring it out to me. And then that goes back to involuntary sampling. If your product's not on the shelf when it should be, people aren't going to go to the back room and get it. They're going to get the next best thing. And then there you are as well. So think about the lazy people like me that refuse to go into stores as well.
I don't think you're lazy, Teddy.
I don't go into stores.
I'd like to know. We've already talked about this. I know it, but I know you can't tell me otherwise that when they don't bring it out to you, that's there's a cutoff. There has to be a cutoff or a quota. Like if we have 100 breads, potato chips, doesn't matter. We have 100 style of regular potato chips. If we get down to 50, we are not sending it out to the cars.
Oh, there for
right?
sure is.
It's you got to come in and get it.
Yeah.
I feel like
there's got to be something.
I feel like everything's always like a 20%, you know, like a 20% notification limit, something like that. So whatever that is based off of that product, they probably just
maybe it's even higher now that I think about it. Anyways,
you gotta
too many personal reveals today.
Prioritize the non-lazy people coming in.
It's not lazy.
The deliveries.
It's not lazy, Teddy. You're trying to be efficient. I understand it. All right. I'll reveal. Sometimes we try to do like a quick store pickup and then you don't get what you actually need. You're like, oh, we needed onion powder. And we're not giving you onion powder.
It always backfires.
Great. So now I have to go in and get it. And now I'm going to get
Is that it? Is it all just a lie?
Right next to that cookie baking mix.
Did we save any time or money? No, we did not.
We just discovered it's all a lie and they're just getting you to come inside. There is nothing wrong with the shelves.
Yeah, it's all creating traffic.
It's the end of the day. Consumers, like you talked about.
There's absolutely no stopping them.
Yep. I think that's it. At the risk of not going into 45 minutes of just tariff rambling.
There's a lot of cuts to be made here.
Watch this space for more tariff updates. Keep an eye on your local Blue Sky, True Social, X Feed, the Everything app. Like and subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Thank you, Teddy. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you
to our listeners for joining us in another edition of the Zipline Logistics
Podcast.
We'll see you next time.